Self-deception can be good for us. Not always, but we'll talk this hour about how we deceive ourselves in all kinds of ways and the consequences and the power of self-deception. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest is the author of the new book, Kidding Ourselves. And we will welcome your questions for him. We'll welcome maybe your own moments in which you deceived yourself or caught someone else doing the same. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Joe Hallinan. He is a journalist and author, and his most recent book is Kidding Ourselves, The Hidden Power of Self-Deception. Good morning.
Good morning.
I understand you'll be visiting Wisconsin soon and going fishing.
I will. I can't wait. I'll be there in about 10 days, and I already got the tackle box packed.
Way to go. So if you hope that you have a good day on the lake, will you have a good day on the lake?
I hope I will, and I'll be with my son, so fish or no fish, it'll still be a good day on the water.
Yeah, but talk a little bit about, that was my transition, talk a little bit on how if we think things are going to be okay, sometimes a research says that helps things be okay.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think we deceive ourselves a lot more in daily life than we have any idea that we're actually doing. For instance, there was a recent study that just came out where they outfitted actual real people, not laboratory types, but real people with little accelerometers that measure how much exercise they get during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And they had them wear this, and at the end of a week, they had them report how much exercise they thought they got. And then they compared that to how much exercise they actually did get, because little devices measure that. And they found, not surprisingly, that men said they got like 6 times as much exercise as they actually got. And women said they got about 5 times as much as they actually got. So we deceive ourselves about little things like this constantly all through the day.
Yeah. So do men tend to deceive themselves more than women?
I think. I mean, it's pretty close, and people can debate it, which study you look at. But I think probably once you stack everything up, I think probably men are a bit more delusional than women.
And
be a bit more realistic. Certainly if they're fishermen, that's true.
So, yeah, it was should have seen the one that got away.
Exactly.
But no, I maybe talk a little about it, when we're talking about self-deception, that's just explain what that means. What's the definition of self-deception?
Yeah, self-deception is simply kidding yourself. It's when you have a perception of something that doesn't square with reality. Reality is different from the way you think it is, whether it's how much exercise you get or anything else. And that's essentially self-deception. You deceive yourself about something.
Go ahead.
No, no, it's good. And I wrote this because I wondered why in the world would people do that, because we're taught since we're kids that, gosh, if you deceive yourself, you're just going to make mistakes and wind up, terrible in prison or what have you. And I thought, well, why would we have this trait if all it did was get us in trouble? And that led me to find that actually it has an upside to it.
Yeah, well, so what is the upside of it?
Sure. Largely it's beneficial to us. I think our minds automatically adjust our perception of reality, a bit like, if you want to think of it, a car's headlights switching from low beam to high depending on the demands of the road. And it adjusts our perception in a way that makes it easier for us to persevere and carry on. And the most significant thing it does, I think, is distorts things in an optimistic way. You probably heard the old Yogi Berra line that 90% of baseball, said 90% of the game is half mental. And I think that's true in life as well. Most of the game is half mental. And if you can become optimistic about things, if you can see the glass as half full, it actually helps you do the things you need to do to carry on in life.
Yeah. Your previous book, Why We Make Mistakes, does self-deception, you say it's largely beneficial, but does it result in making mistakes?
Oh, it does. I don't think there's any question about it. I look at self-deception a bit like people look at cholesterol. You've got good cholesterol and you've got bad cholesterol. And I think the same thing with self-deception. I think you have certainly the bad self-deception, which we all know about. I mean, if you convince yourself you can fly and you jump out of a skyscraper, bad things are going to happen to you no matter no matter what you believe, that's bad self-deception. But good self-deception can actually help you become more successful in life. There was a, for instance, there was a study not long ago where looked at actual real life insurance agents. And it looked at how they accounted for the setbacks that they had at work. And they found that people who used optimistic explanations for the bad things that happened to them, even if those optimistic explanations weren't true, ended up not only selling more life insurance policies, but more importantly, they didn't quit. The people who offered the negative explanations, like I'm no good at this and I never have been, those people were the ones they sold less and they quit earlier than the other guys. So it can have real benefits in life.
Well, let's talk about how you start your book with an example of the white coat.
Sure.
Depending on what people were told about this coat, they were they performed differently. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's interesting. For instance, researchers found out that if you wear a white coat and are told that the coat belongs to a doctor, your ability to pay attention increases sharply. But if you wear the same coat, believing that it belongs not to a doctor, but to a painter, you'll show no such improvement. So just the belief that you're wearing a doctor's coat is enough to basically make you pay more attention and coax a little bit more from your tank. I think that's kind of the bottom line. Most of us never use 100% of any of our abilities. We always have a little extra in the tank. And often kidding ourselves, whether it's about a white coat or something else, can tweak a little bit more performance out of us.
Yeah, so somehow, if we think we're wearing a doctor's coat, we just, I don't know, we just feel smarter and bigger and better or something than a painter?
Yeah, smarter, bigger, better. I even kind of actually found a very similar thing happens on the golf course. Probably some of the guys listening to this now are headed to the course. It's a beautiful day out there. And there was, again, an interesting little piece of research a couple of years ago where they took a group of people and asked them to putt a golf ball. And they divided the group in two. The first group just got a regular golf ball and were told to go putt the golf ball and see how well you do. But the second group was given a golf ball, and they were told that this golf ball had been lucky so far. And then they were told to go putt. And they compared what happened, and they found that the people who believed they were playing with a lucky golf ball putted far better than the people who believed they were just playing with a regular ball. Now, of course, the ball wasn't lucky at all. They were just told that. But the fact that they believed it, just like the people believe they were wearing a doctor's white coat, that belief made a difference. And I think anybody who plays golf or any kind of competitive sport knows the difference that kind of belief and confidence can make in their game.
So, you know, if I carry around a lucky charm or a lucky penny and I think this is going to help. In fact, I'll forego the boring story, but it doesn't, and it's the most unlucky day of my life. How come I don't just say, well, enough of that?
Well, people cling to that. I think, you rationalize it in one way or another because you think, okay, nobody can be lucky all the time, but you still want to carry your little lucky coins. In fact, is that true? Do you carry a lucky coin?
I don't. I went on a trip, though, recently, and one of my travel mates said, you know what, I always find lucky pennies when I travel, and they really do give us luck. And so we actually did find pennies in the airport. So we thought, okay, it's going to be a lucky, lucky day of travel. And everything, of course, that could possibly go wrong went wrong, even though we thought it was going to be a lucky day of travel. That's
all. A lot of people do that, baseball players, et cetera. Even we're just coming up on the anniversary of D-Day tomorrow, and I was rereading some history, and I found that Dwight Eisenhower, a former Allied commander, would actually carry lucky coins, a little purse of lucky coins that he carried with him everywhere he went. So even a guy like that, supremely logical, very fact-based kind of guy, you try to get any little advantage you can, any little psychological edge, and if carrying around a little purse of lucky coins, as he did, gives you a little mental advantage, well, so much the better.
Yeah, but tell us what's really going on there. There is something going on in our brains, in our minds, that says, I think, therefore, it will be better?
Yeah, we don't know exactly, on a cellular or molecular level, what happens when people deceive themselves. But largely, it boils down to playing with confidence, giving people confidence to go on and do whatever kind of difficult thing it is they have to do. And it particularly seems to bias us in kind of a rose-colored glasses way to make things look a little bit better than it actually is. and that keeps us optimistic. And the key thing it does, I think, is it works, if you want to think about it, as kind of the body's psychological immune system. It works pretty much the same way the body's real immune system does, which is automatically and with no awareness on our part that it's actually working. But instead of helping to fight off infections, it wards off things like depression. And depression is a major physical drain on the body. There was a study, the famous Grant study at Harvard University, and it followed Harvard graduates throughout the course of their lives, all their lives. And it found that of the people who were diagnosed with depression by age of 50, 70% of them were either dead or chronically ill by the age of 63. So if you're just able to stave off that, kind of keep your head in the game, not get depressed, keep doing what you're doing, you are far, far, far ahead of the game.
Well, you do write a lot about how self-deception influences our health, including the now well-known placebo effect. So that's what's happening here. How does that work?
Yeah, you know, a placebo effect is basically something that has no medical properties. The common example is a sugar pill that doctors will give you, and you believe that it, like the white coat, you believe that it actually does have some healing properties. And it's very well established that the placebo effect is a very real thing. It's been documented for hundreds and hundreds of years. And it worked so well that actually half of the doctors in the United States said in a 2008 poll that they regularly prescribe placebos to their patients. So the odds are good right here that either you or I have had a placebo one time or another. That's how well they work.
Yeah, but you also, though, say we can get sick with self-deception, pointing to examples of mass illnesses in schools. Are there really physical ailments that are all in our head?
There are. Just like everything, the placebo effect cuts two ways. You know, I said earlier that there's good cholesterol, bad cholesterol. Same with the placebo effect. You can either believe that the drug or the surgery or whatever it is you're taking will help you, and you can also, there's also negative effects. They can harm you. And you'll recall, I think this is about 2 years ago now, there was that outbreak at the school in upstate New York with about a dozen girls who developed a variety of these strange tics and mannerisms. And that was largely considered to be what they call mass hysteria or mass contagion, where people kind of catch this behavior from each other. They believe it's real, but it appears to be not.
Yeah, I do remember many examples of people who maybe thought they were getting sick from fumes in a building, and
yep,
then everybody got sick, and then it turned out there really weren't any fumes in the building or something.
You'd be surprised how often that happens. If you just kind of keep your eye on the newspaper, you'll see how often those kind of mass contagion effects occur. And there's even a study recently that looked at the ability to spread that kind of emotion, if you want to call it that, through the internet, particularly using Facebook, and they found that people can actually basically catch somebody else's emotional state from the newspaper, from the internet.
We're talking about instances when we deceive ourselves, and how it can be many times beneficial to us. And we're welcoming your thoughts, your questions, your own experiences. Will you admit to deceiving yourself, kidding yourself? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Joe Hallinan. He is the author of Kidding Ourselves, The Hidden Power of Self-Deception. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about the power of self-deception with Joseph Hallinan, who is a journalist and author. He is the author of Why We Make Mistakes, and his most recent book is Kidding Ourselves, The Hidden Power of Self-Deception. And we welcome your questions and your own examples. Do you have a moment in which you deceived yourself or caught someone else doing the same? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. let's talk a little bit more about the downside, I guess, of self-deception. Why is self-deception contagious?
Ooh, why is it contagious? You know, I'm not sure why. I don't know is the short answer, and I don't know that anybody's ever looked at why any kind of human emotion, not just self-deception, but any kind of emotion is contagious, whether it's happiness, sadness, anything like that. But we appear to be very social creatures. We hang out with other people. Even something as simple as a yawn is very contagious. If somebody starts to yawn, other people will yawn. Now, why you would mimic that, nobody knows, but the fact that we do mimic each other is pretty well established, and we are very social creatures, and emotions as well as diseases and all sorts of other things spread through us very rapidly.
On the plus side, according to your research, self-deception can also ease pain, symptoms of asthma, irritable bowel syndrome. What can't we cure with self-deception?
You know, it's pretty amazing when they've looked at, again, the so-called placebo effect, where they give people fake medical treatments. Now, it can be either in the form of a pill where they give you a fake medicine. It can be in the form of, say, fake acupuncture, where instead of pricking your skin with a needle, they'll just touch it with a toothpick. It can even be in the form of fake surgery, where in carefully controlled situations, they will give you, for instance, a little souvenir scar, but otherwise perform no real surgery. And they found very often that the results of the real surgery are no better than the fake. And in fact, I myself have had one of these surgeries. If you've ever had a torn meniscus in your knee,
Yeah. There's
a study that just came out that said the fake surgery, where they just leave a little souvenir scar, worked just as well as the real surgery for many of the people in the experiment. So even surgery, which a lot of people think of as kind of an objective, scientific treatment, has a huge placebo effect involved.
So my husband didn't have to have that meniscus surgery after all.
You can save the money.
Well, you also say, though, that we deceive ourselves about how risky things are, like, you know, why so many people smoke when we... Yeah, so many people know that that it's dangerous. How does that work?
Yeah, you know, we are what people call risk optimists. And when it comes to considering any kind of risk, we appear to have an us versus them approach to it. We can acknowledge, for instance, that smoking cigarettes causes cancer. Most people, I think only 4% of the population believes it doesn't. So the vast majority of people know that basically smoking cigarettes is bad, but they smokers tend not to believe it's bad for them. And they'll come up with all sorts of justifications for that. They'll say, oh, my Uncle Harold smoked, you know, till the day he died when he was 95 or something like that. But they tend to view themselves as kind of immune to the risk at large that they think everybody else is facing. And men, as I mentioned at the outset, are particularly bad at this. You know, men tend not to wear their seatbelts as often as women because they think they're better drivers, and therefore they're not going to get in accidents. So it results in all sorts of bad decisions like that.
Well, we have a listener on Facebook who says, I think he actually posted a poster type thing, definition of stupid, knowing the truth, seeing the truth, but still believing the lies. Is he kidding himself?
You know, I guess there's a whole lot of definition of stupid out there, and you can vary that. I mean, certainly, you know, ignoring the truth, if you know what the truth is hazardous. I mean, if you touch a 10,000-volt wire, knowing that it's filled with 10,000 volts of electricity and you think it's not going to hurt you, well, you're going to discover the truth in very short order. So absolutely that's the case. But where the truth is something a little bit more ambiguous, you know, whether you're an athlete and you're wondering whether you can actually set that record, or, you know, whether you're at work and you're wondering if you can actually complete this project, those kinds of things are a little bit more questionable. And kind of kidding yourself about what you can do, what's achievable, what's really possible, whether that coin in your pocket is really lucky, those things can have a great benefit.
Let's go to Benjamin in Waukesha. Hi, Benjamin.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'll make this quick because unfortunately I'm about to get to work. But I found this really interesting. I'm an internet marketer and done a lot of work with so-called life coaches and people that are sort of preaching this philosophy of the law of attraction, which really is just based in the power of positive thought. And I'm kind of a natural pessimist, unfortunately. But I had noticed that, some of these people really believe that they are manifesting good things in their life. And if you say it and believe it, it will come true. And it's less scientific and more metaphysical. But, a lot of people seem to get into it with they think they have the right mindset, but in fact they don't. So the life coaches can say, well, you don't really believe what you're saying. So I guess my question is, if this does clearly seem to work for some people and almost change their luck, how can you actually change your thought pattern to believing things in a positive way and believing that good things are going to come to you as opposed to just believing that you're going to believe it and then it never really happens?
Ooh, that's a hard one.
I see that. I want to draw a little bit of a distinction because the self-deception I talk about basically occurs automatically. Your body takes care of itself. Just as I said earlier, it's kind of a psychological immune system. It occurs with no real prompting on your part. It's just the way you will end up seeing things. And life coaches, I've never been to one, but as I understand it, what they're trying to do is come up with a conscious way of doing that. And I tend to think that probably doesn't work so well. I suspect it's a little bit like steroids. It may pump you up short term, but I think long term it can probably do significant damage if you come to believe things that are ultimately harmful. But the key lesson is that your body will do these kinds of things, your mind will do these kinds of things pretty much automatically and take care of itself. One of the interesting little ways it does this, for instance, is it makes your memory a little kinder than you might realize. One of the best examples, which if there's any professors at Madison listening to this, they can try this on their students, is the way we remember our grades in high school. They've done a number of studies where they've just asked regular people, you, me, how'd you do in high school? And they found out that people consistently remember their grades as being better than they were. Up to 90% of the people overestimate their GPA. Yeah, and you think, okay, kind of funny. But the interesting thing is, this wasn't a conscious effort on their part to make themselves appear to be smarter. And they know this because they went back and they looked at their memory by letter grade, and they found, for instance, that people never forgot an A. Like the recall for an A was 89%. But that recall went down with each successive letter grade. So that by the time it got down to a D, the recall rate was only 29%. So pretty much automatically the brain had kind of scrubbed history, and people tended to remember the good grade and forget the bad grade. And then they went on in life thinking they were better students than they were, which arguably can help you out later in life because you're not held back by your poor performance.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you're blocking out the bad.
And I actually, I didn't believe that when I read that. Mm. So I went back to my own personal case. I went up to the attic. I pulled out my grades. And there was my one report card. I pulled it out, and I pretty much, like most people, I remembered myself as an A and B man myself. And I went back and looked, and there was a C+. And not only did I get a C+, but I got it in writing, which is my favorite course. And I thought, God, if I had gone through life thinking of myself as a C+ writer, my career could be substantially different than it ended up being.
Well, it's interesting because you probably thought you could do this. You're doing it.
I think that's pretty much true. And again, what intrigues me is that your mind kind of does this stuff automatically. You're not really trying to scrub your memory. It's just how you remember things.
Yeah. Well, then we really don't know that we're kidding ourselves. This is just completely, we're not saying, I am looking in the mirror now. I am going to think I'm really good looking, and therefore, we don't know we're kidding ourselves.
No, we have no idea. We certainly believe it's true of other people. Everybody probably is right now thinking of somebody at work or their neighbors or somebody that thinks they're absolutely delusional, but they think they're seeing themselves. They see the world absolutely clearly as it is. It's like being in a bar full of drunks and you think you're the only sober person. That's definitely true. People think other people are deceiving themselves, but they're very clear-eyed, very much realist, and pretty much it's not true.
Yeah, so getting down to Benjamin's question specifically, you're saying there probably isn't a way, is not a way for us to deceive ourselves more in the positive direction?
I don't know that you can intentionally deceive yourself, because I think if you try that, if you essentially try to lie to yourself, some part of you knows that what you're telling yourself isn't true. And so it won't work. I don't think you can intentionally do what your mind appears to do automatically and subconsciously, because I think when you try to do that, you kind of blow the effectiveness of the thing.
Yeah. But according to all this research, since Benjamin said he tends to be a pessimist, mm-hmm. compared to someone who tends to be an optimist, Benjamin is going to maybe have a harder time getting through life than that optimist?
Yeah, I hate to say that, but I think so. Again, that Grant study I mentioned earlier that's followed a group of Harvard graduates throughout their life found that to be true. You know, they found that people who, at the age of 25, used, again, optimistic explanations for trying to explain why bad things happened to them, were far healthier at midlife and beyond than were the people who used negative explanations. So there appears to be a fair amount of evidence that having that kind of positive bias is beneficial. And in fact, there was a Time magazine poll last year that found that only about 4% of the population considered themselves pessimists, about 79% or almost 20 times as much considered themselves to be optimistic. And so I think there's a pretty significant gap there, and it's ultimately beneficial.
Let's go to Richard in Milwaukee. Hello, Richard.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. It's a great discussion. I'd just like to add a thought, and maybe your guest can elaborate on this. But you talk about, you know, this event or that event having this word deception. It's an interesting word. I think that people who think positively, I'll use that term, it starts to become their lived reality, which is different than this event or this thought or this incident having a positive outlook. It becomes their lived reality. So this word deception, I'm not sure if it's. I think a person chooses to have a positive world. I think choice is extremely important here. And they choose to have a more positive existence, as opposed to a talisman for this and a talisman for that.
Joe?
Yeah, I mean, certainly I believe in free choice, and people do choose things, and they can certainly choose to what they believe. They can even choose to believe things that are pretty much demonstrably not true. And that'll certainly have an effect on their life. That will certainly impact how it is they live. As you say, you talk about the lived reality. Certainly the case, and you can probably think of people in your own life who have chosen to believe certain things and have constructed their life around that. And again, that's a conscious choice. But again, what's intrigued me about the self-deception is it occurs unconsciously, pretty much automatically. And that's the thing that really intrigues me about this.
We are talking about the benefits of self-deception. Certainly there are some drawbacks to it too, but for the most part, surprisingly, when we deceive ourselves, things work out. And we're talking about why that is. We're talking about the research behind this, and we're welcoming your questions and your examples. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Joe Hallinan. He is the author of Kidding Ourselves, The Hidden Power of Self-Deception. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about the many ways in which we delude ourselves, kid ourselves, deceive ourselves. Our guest is the author of Kidding Ourselves, The Hidden Power of Self-Deception. talking about the good and the bad that can result from self-deception and welcoming your questions for him. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And Joe, we talked about the example of the white coat in the very beginning of the hour. And depending on what people were told about this coat, that whether it was a painter's coat or a doctor's coat, they behaved differently. If they thought they were wearing the doctor's coat, they were more focused and self-confident. Talk some other ways about what we wear, how does that trick us into different behavior?
Sure, you know, and they actually have a whole name for this type of feature. They call it enclosed cognition, which is a fancy way of basically saying, you know, the old saying, clothes make the man. Well, in a way, they kind of do. You function in terms of how your clothes are. If they make you feel a certain way, you're a little bit more likely to perform that way. And that's true, as I say, not just of clothes, but it's true if you have your lucky penny or your lucky coins. Anything that you believe gives you a little bit of a boost can often give you that very kind of boost in performance that they've talked about. Exercise physiologists, for instance, have found that when they have people engage in a muscular competition, kind of like lifting weights or something like that, if basically during the course of the competition they're lied to and told, gosh, you did a really great job, way to go, you're really doing great, that they can actually lift more in subsequent competitions than the people who weren't told those things. So all those little boosts can help us.
Yeah, so if we wear something that we think makes us look really good, we're going to be better in that job interview.
And in fact, most people kind of tend to have a better view of themselves than objective evidence would warrant. There was a very interesting experiment done in part here at the University of Chicago a little while ago where they took pictures of everyday people, you, me, everybody like that, and then they digitally altered those photos to make the person in the picture appear either more handsome, more attractive, or less attractive. And they put those in an array, kind of like a police lineup. And they went back to the person whose photos they had taken. They spread these photos out for them from least attractive to most attractive and asked them a simple question. They said, pick the real you. Which one of these photographs is the unretouched you, the genuine you? And they found out that most people, not surprisingly, picked the better-looking picture as the real them than the actual picture. And so that's the way people actually see themselves. It's kind of a little bit better than maybe they really are, and there's a benefit to that in life.
That reminds me of, sometimes you'll hear, and maybe it's a stereotype, but sometimes people wonder, why is that beautiful, attractive woman with that, you know, nerdy-looking guy?
A question for the ages.
And is that because that nerdy-looking guy was reaching for the stars?
Well, it's funny you should say that. The short answer is yes, there is. And researchers have looked into this. There's a big fancy name for it called sexual overperception. And they have found, and this is not going to come as a shock to probably most of your readers, at least to the female readers, that men consistently overrate their attraction to women. And they found that it's particularly true depending on the attractiveness of the woman. So the more attractive the woman is, the more the man will tend to think that she is interested in him. And the researchers look at it and say that obviously this serves the purpose that you just highlighted, that, okay, he may be kind of dorky looking, and he may be, you know, keeps hitting on women who are way out of his league, but, you know, you knock on a door often enough, and sooner or later somebody answers.
Now, lots of calls, so let's go to Fred in Palmyra next. Hello, Fred.
Hi, I think you just kind of covered my question.
Oh, I didn't mean to steal your thunder, Fred.
Yeah, the only thing I could add is that how do we deceive ourselves about the object of our love interest when we think we're falling in love with someone?
Fred, are you married to some super hot woman and you're just trying to figure out how it happened? Or I'm kidding.
No, I think he's trying to think of, you know, are we deceiving ourselves when we're falling in love with someone else? Or maybe we put those rose-colored glasses and we don't see the other person's faults, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I'm certainly sure that I'm no expert on love, but when you're falling in love, you do tend to see the good and not the bad, and maybe that doesn't come out until later on. But certainly in terms of men, how they perceive themselves versus the woman, they definitely will perceive themselves as being more attractive, more attractive to her than they really are. And curiously, the kind of reverse seems to work with women. They've done studies, for instance, where they have these mock speed dating competitions. I don't know if you know about speed dating, mm-hmm. but where men and women will basically sit down at a table across from each other and have a minute or 2 minutes or 3 minutes to get to know each other, and boom, they move on to the next person, and so on and so forth. And they found that when that happens, the women involved usually underrate the man's interest in them. So whereas the men will overrate, the women will underrate. I suppose, I guess it works out in the middle.
Yeah. Chris in Greendale is with us. Hello, Chris.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hey there.
Hi, yeah. I was wondering if the guest was at all familiar with a study that was done with rats, in which they basically, like, rats in similar upbringings, like, were basically put into a situation in which they were, like, given levers that would either, like, give a positive or negative outcome and also a neutral outcome. And so the rats favored, like, the positive, like, regardless of the fact that, like, they produced negative outcomes in the past. And, like, when they did studies on the rats, they found that, like, they performed better in cognitive tests. They did better in terms of their actual, like, just health outcomes. Like, they had lower levels of cortisol. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if he was familiar with that.
I am familiar with a lot of rat research, which is mentioned in the book, not that one in particular, but you mentioned cortisol, which is a hormone that the body secretes when it's under stress. And they did find, for instance, that when people are under stress, they do secrete cortisol. And one study looked at how that affected our judgment, and they looked at people who trade stocks. And they found that when people were under stress and their cortisol levels went up, it actually ended up making them risk-averse. So they would take fewer chances when they felt under stress like that, and it actually affected the stocks that they would buy and sell. So even though you might think you're being 100% completely rational in all the decisions you're making, something as subtle as the cortisol coursing around in your bloodstream can affect the decisions you make.
I read a research involving rats that you wrote about on your blog, and it was a sad research project. I don't know if we have to go into all sorts of details there, but it showed that rats, when they had hope, would not give up on a task.
Yeah, it's a very, very kind of famous study, a little bit gruesome, but very famous, and they found out that even when you could imbue hope in rats, which some people may say, how in the world do you imbue hope in rats? But even when rats feel like they have something to hang on for, something literally to keep them swimming in this case, because the rats were placed in water, that they are able to swim much, much, much longer than rats who don't. And so they found that even that kind of intangible quality can have a very measurable impact on their lives.
And I guess I probably should explain that it just was kind of sad. But the rats who were swimming for a while and then were rescued temporarily and put back in the water, they would continue to swim thinking that there's a chance they're going to, you know, that someone's going to save them again or that they would be out of this situation. And those who didn't have that intervention gave up much quicker.
Exactly. Yeah. That was exactly what happened. You know, if they felt that, hey, there's a, you know, rescue at hand, if there's a little reprieve somewhere around the corner, they were able to swim a lot longer than the other rats. And that's been borne out by a variety of research since.
Yeah. We are talking about a lot of research that tells us that there's a lot of power in self-deception. There's good and bad from self-deception, but we are talking a lot about the power of it and the benefits of it, the surprising benefits of deceiving ourselves. Our guest is Joe Hallinan, and he is the author of Kidding Ourselves. 1-800-642-1234. If you have a question about this science of kidding ourselves, or if you have an example of maybe you witnessed someone who's kidding themselves or deceiving themselves and want to talk about it. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Dave in Milwaukee is next. Hello, Dave.
Hi, thanks for having me. I just would like to make a comment about the power of deceiving ourselves. I think it's very interesting how modern science and all across the board has been proving ancient held traditions and beliefs to be true and scientifically proven. And this one specifically, the Yaqui Indians of Mexico had a belief that in order to see the world as it truly is, to see from all different perceptions, you had to disprove everything that you believe true. Take any belief that you have and prove it to be wrong. And the sense of lying to yourself and the benefits of it, I think, really plays into what they were getting at, too.
You have a
reaction? That's the only comment I'd like to make. So
it's been around. It's been around forever, and we're just looking into it, Joe?
Yeah, well, you know, I take his point, and I think there is something to the fact that science has borne out that there is a little something to many of the beliefs and practices that people hold. Maybe they don't work in the same way as people think. You know, if you're a baseball player and you rub your bat with a chicken bone, does that actual act make your bat better? Does it make you a better hitter? Scientifically, no. There's no transfer of something from the chicken bone to the bat, obviously. But what goes on is the instilling of that confidence, just like with the little rats you talked about swimming in the water. And if you feel that you've got that, you can definitely perform better. So I think there is a bit of wisdom. You know, that there's that old saying that there's no atheist in foxholes. And I think there's a lot of wisdom to that, that if you believe you've got some advantage, no matter what that is, whether it's the chicken bone or something else, that it can actually help. It can benefit you in ways that you might not even imagine.
Mitch in Madison is with us. Hello, Mitch.
Hey, I think the last caller just kind of touched on what I was wanted to talk about, which was organized religion or the idea of a all-knowing, all-seeing, all-powerful God. That's really the ultimate self-deception. I'm not saying I'm an atheist, but the bottom line is that how many times do we go into situations where we go, protect me, God, or say a prayer, and you know, I think of people going into battle, into bad situations where they really don't have a chance, and thinking that somehow, some way, they're going to survive that's the ultimate self-deception, isn't it?
Well, in a way, I take your point, and it touches on a larger subject, which I write about in the book, about the whole issue of control. And research has shown that for most human beings, what's critical, what's really essential, is that you have some sense of control in the world. You know, either you believe you control things or that some higher authority controls things, but do you have some sense of control of things? And if you don't, you will try to obtain that sense of control very quickly, either, you know, through religion or through seeing things in a certain way, or in terms of very tangible ways. There was a story a couple of weeks ago, for instance, where a ABC anchor, a woman, came on Good Morning America and said that she had breast cancer and was trying to battle that. And one of the things she did, and why she appeared on GMA, was she got her long hair cut very, very short. And she said she did that because it gave her a sense of control over the cancer. And I thought that was incredibly powerful because obviously hair length doesn't affect the growth of cancer cells. But the fact that you took command and you did something that gave you a sense of control was very important in fighting the things. And people do that time and time again. We talk in there about all the different fears that people have. That's what makes, for instance, flying in an airplane so scary for many people, even though it's statistically far safer than driving a car. In their car, they're in control. They're behind the wheel. But 30,000 feet in the sky, somebody else is driving the plane, and they have no control. Same thing with the dentist's office. Studies have shown that's what makes people afraid of the dentist so afraid. It's not the pain they really fear. is sitting in that dentist chair and having no control over what's going on in their mouth. So control is a very important subject.
Judy in Fond du Lac is with us. Hi, Judy.
Hi. Very interesting show, Joy. Thank you. I was thinking that I deceive myself all the time when I look in the mirror, and I'm prepared to look in the mirror. You get out of the shower, you're prepared. The mirror is right across from you. And then you get dressed, and you look at yourself, and you think, hey, you know, I don't look so bad. Well, you walk down the street, and you catch your glimpse in a plate glass window, and you didn't expect it. And you say to yourself, oh, my goodness, I'm way more overweight than I ever thought.
I've been there, Judy.
Well, Judy, that's funny, but, you know, it's actually true. There was just, a recent study, but this just came out a couple weeks ago. And taking a page from your book there, he found that most parents, for instance, believe that their children are leaner than they are. Two-thirds of parents, for instance, underestimate the weight of their children. And this was especially true for parents of kids who were overweight or obese. So, you know, it affects not just the way you see yourself in the mirror or in the store glass window, but affects the way you see your children and loved ones as well.
Yeah. Well, is there any bad or good consequence from someone who thinks, I guess, talk a little bit more about that. She thought she looked pretty spiffy in the mirror, but was shockingly disappointed when she saw herself in the plate glass mirror.
Well, you know, it can cut both ways. In the example with the kids I talked about, the downside of that, obviously, is if you're trying to fight childhood obesity, you now need to understand that you have to start with the parents' perception, because if the parents don't think their kid is overweight, then any kind of effort to get them to have their child lose weight is probably not going to be effective. On the other hand, getting ready in the morning, looking at yourself in the mirror and thinking you're looking pretty good is, I think, very beneficial, because you've got to go out in the work world, wherever that is. You've got to face people. You've got to interact with people. And it's really important that you feel good about yourself, because obviously if you feel bad about yourself, probably other people are going to pick up on that vibe, and that's not going to be good for your career. Yeah. So it can cut both ways.
Yeah, so we're almost out of time. Is there any way we can harness what we've learned from you today, or is all of this just going to keep on being in our subconscious?
Yeah, the way to harness it, I think, is to maybe be a little bit easier on yourself. You know, the way we talk about people who seem to do well is we call them well-adjusted, which I think is a key phrase. And I think your body has the ability to make those adjustments for you. So I think if you lighten up on yourself a little bit and just kind of take it all in and breathe a little bit, things will work out. Things will be just fine, and your body and your mind will alter things in a way that ultimately helps you.
Thank you so much for being with us, and much, much luck on your fishing trip to Wisconsin soon.
I will need it, that's for sure. Thanks, Joy.
Thanks a lot for being with us. Joseph Helinen is a journalist and author. His most recent book is Kidding Ourselves, The Hidden Power of Self-Deception. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Bill Martins for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come, and I hope you join us tomorrow at this time. Every Friday at this time, it's the Week in Review. We'll talk with two guests from opposing political perspectives about the top stories in politics this week. That's the Week in Review coming up tomorrow at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.